Part 11 of Counterspin Media's Truthathon. Dr. Mark Bailey, co-author of The Final Pandemic, An Antidote to Medical Tyranny, answers the big question, do viruses exist?
Counterspin Media is unveiling the Great Awakening and resisting the Great Reset in this 12-hour Truthathon titled Conquering Darkness, heralding humanity's triumph over the New World Order.
No one has ever isolated a virus. This is admitted by modern science, who claim it's impossible. So instead, they mix it with a soup of other genetic materials, run it through a computer, and create what is known as a consensus genome. The theory that the invisible virus is a lie was put forth nearly 30 years ago by William Bramley in his book, The Gods of Eden, where he outlines thousands of years of human culling events. He points out how during the Black Death, sightings of humans dressed in black and wielding what were described as scythes were seen before an outbreak of the plague. Bramley suggested that the scythes may have been tools designed to spray poison gas. Denis Rancor suggests that there has never been a virulent pathogen, including the bubonic plague, and that these historic mass death events are done deliberately by oppressive systems to maintain population control. If you want to routinely cull the population, then an invisible virus that you cannot see or prove would be the perfect lie. In the 1930s, engineer Royal Rife created microscopes capable of magnifying material over 17,000 times. Modern microscopes can only provide a magnification of about 2,400. We've been denied the magnification required to actually see if a virus exists. This idea first gained a foothold during the HIV/AIDS scare, when people such as Peter Duisberg, Carrie Mullis, and Celia Farber were exposing the lies of Anthony Fauci. And it gained serious traction during the COVID era with the work of Andrew Kaufman, Tom Cowan, Denis Rancor, and Dr. Lee Merritt. Dr. Lee Merritt studied the official test for SARS-CoV-2 and found they are actually testing for the Homo sapien genome, which is highly suspect. And there are many other suspicious facts. They test our nose, which, like a filter, is full of foreign contaminants. The PCR tests are being deliberately overcycled to find falsified results. What we are told is a deadly virus looks identical to an exosome, a naturally occurring part of cellular cleansing. The first scientific publication created to disseminate information to the public was named after an ancient altar used for ritual sacrifice called Pergamon, and the first editor was Mossad agent Robert Maxwell. Over 100 years ago, doctors were well aware of how deadly parasites could be to the human body. John D. Rockefeller's main advisor, Frederick Gates, convinced Rockefeller to modernize medicine by eradicating hookworm, a parasite that was known to be the biggest cause of disease back in 1905. Up until the 1980s, textbooks were not talking about viruses as the cause of disease. They were talking about parasites. Today, while animals require routine deworming, modern science says that it's not a problem for humans. After decades of research, a group of German doctors found that every single cancer cell contained parasites, and that if cancer treatments such as chemotherapy failed to kill all of these parasites, then the parasites will be given the perfect conditions to spread throughout the body. The parasites start in the bloodstream and spread to other parts of the body where they grow into cysts. Under a microscope, parasitic cysts look identical to what we call tumors. They had films, they published papers, but it all got buried. Because if 100% of cancer patients have parasites, then parasites are likely causing cancer. And today, the COVID shots, which we know are destroying natural immunity, are creating turbo cancers. Having a lapdog under the age of 5 increases the chances of getting multiple sclerosis, which cannot be explained by MS being an autoimmune disease, but can be explained by brain parasites. Pathologist Alan McDonald studied the brain and spinal cords of dead MS patients, and they all had parasites. We all have parasites, brain parasites being the most dangerous, and the parasite Toxoplasma gondii has a significant ability to infect the human brain, and it is found in insects, which is probably why they want us to eat bugs. The good news is that there is a remedy to these parasites. A healthy immune system can take care of most of them, which requires good nutrition, regular exercise, peace of mind, and love. And routine parasite cleanses can take care of the rest. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Well, welcome back to the Counterspin at Truthathon, Conquering Darkness, and what a show it has been. Thanks to Samantha, James Roguski, and Barry Young for joining us there. Now, our next guest is a New Zealander, and he and his wife have been speaking out about a lot of the fraud that is existing within the medical industry. This is, of course, Dr. Mark Bailey, and he is the husband of Dr. Sam Bailey. And when you see one of them, you are really seeing both of them, and just not today. They started working together when they first met in 2007 and have been a close team ever since. Mark and Sam are based in New Zealand, and they have three children together. Since early 2020, he has been the duo's chief researcher with a focus on microbiology, the existence of viruses, as well as historical and epistemological issues within medical science. Mark won an undergraduate scholarship to the University of Canterbury in 1994 and then completed his medical training at the University of Otago in 1999. He worked in many specialties as a resident doctor and was also a clinical trials research physician for several years. In 2016, he left clinical practice due to dissatisfaction with the allopathic medical system. He is also the author of A Farewell to Virology and also co-author of the COVID-19 Fraud, and also this new book, The Final Pandemic, An Antidote to Medical Tyranny.
Very good book.
He wrote with his wife, Samantha, and the foreword is by Professor Tim Noakes. So I'm just going to hold that up. Please go and check that book out, and we'll talk to Mark, and you can find out exactly where you can get it from. Mark, welcome to the show. Another great book by the both of you. Let's start with it was registering on the Amazon
hot list,
wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, well, thanks for inviting me on, Calvin and Hannah. Great to see you guys again. Yeah, the new book. It was interesting because, as you know, the sort of work we do, it certainly doesn't get promoted by the mainstream. And unfortunately, there's plenty of groups within the freedom community who don't promote our work either because we take the no virus stance. But amazingly, when we launched the book, we made it onto the top 100 of every single book on Amazon for about 36 hours. We got to number 77 at peak and top three categories. So it's good to know that the type of the work that we do, the pseudoscience that we're exposing, the fraud that goes on with these alleged pandemics, is starting to reach a lot of people. You know, I think looking back 10 or 20 years, not many people knew about this stuff, but the audience has grown. And I think we're into the millions now of people being aware of this stuff, which is fantastic.
Yeah, so maybe for anybody who is hopefully tuning in to Counterspin for the first time because they've been sent this link by a friend or a family member, why don't you just start with, what do you mean by no viruses? Surely not. Viruses are what this whole pandemic was based on. This big scary thing that we all had to shut down society and change the whole way that we live life.
And had to be told we had it because it was so deadly.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, you guys knew what happened in 2020. There was something rotten going on because they had to keep telling people 24/7 that there was a pandemic on and that there was a deadly virus on the loose, that there was a new disease, etc. Now, while a lot of people around the world lost their heads and started panicking about, you know, getting supposedly infected or killing their grandma with this new thing they were calling eventually COVID-19, researchers like my wife Sam and I went back to the foundational papers that came out of Wuhan and prior to that as well, and just looked at the evidence and said, what did they present to us to show that they had a virus that was contagious, that was spreading around, that was causing a new disease? And they had absolutely no evidence whatsoever. What they did was they fell back to their usual fraudulent virology techniques, which is you know, there's so many of them, we've dissected every single one of them. But essentially what they do is claim that some sequences that they've detected in mixed samples, like lung fluids and snot, etc., sometimes in bowel motions, they take those samples, which are clearly, you know, they've not purified them, they've not demonstrated that there are viruses in these samples, and then they do what we call a trawl. You know, they just go through the whole thing looking for genetic sequences. And when they found some interesting ones, they pieced it together with a computer program and declared to the world that they'd found a new virus. And then within days, they invented a PCR test and started shipping that around the world. So they had no virus, they had no new disease. There was nothing apart from some genetic sequences they'd stitched together on a computer program and then sent out this test around the world. So what unfolded, and this is the way they run pandemics these days, which don't actually exist as they claim, is a pandemic of testing. They just roll the test out, and unfortunately, when people test positive, whether it's on a PCR or a rapid antigen test, everyone then declares that they've got exactly the same thing on the basis of this test. And I mean, the fraud was right in the open. And this is what's unbelievable, is that they don't hide this stuff. You can actually look it up. It's publicly available. And we pointed this out in 2020. We said, look at what the WHO is saying to you. They're saying that a positive case, you know, the case definition of COVID-19 is simply a result of one of these tests. Don't worry about symptoms or signs or doctors seeing the patients. None of that matters. Just do one of these tests and then chalk it up as a case. Now, it's absolutely preposterous, and it goes against all, you know, good science. It goes against all logical processes, but this is what's unfolded. So, yeah, I mean, that's why, as you guys have pointed out, there had to be propaganda around the clock, because otherwise no one believed it. And, of course, with these other stories that we see, and we've gone through this in our new book, The Final Pandemic, so all of these headlines where they say, oh, yeah, it could have come from the wet market, or it could have come from a biolab, or it could have come from Chinese bat caves. You know, it's just one gaslight after another, where they provide no evidence for this. And we walk the audience through that and show the headlines have no evidence. This is just crazy, made-up speculation. And the public are paying the price, because what they get hit with is a fear narrative where they honestly think that their health is at risk. And, you know, that's essentially what the whole COVID scam was about. But, I mean, not only that, the whole problem goes deeper than this, because, and I can tell you this as a doctor that trained in the system, worked in the system for a couple of decades, they tell you that things like contagion of germs has all been established, that this is, don't even look into it. It's your textbooks tell you that this is pure and simple. We, you know, all of the science backs it up. What's shocking for people is that when you actually go and look at these studies that they tried to do for the last 100 years, that this is everything. Every kind of disease that they claim is infectious and, you know, and contagious, they can't transmit it in natural settings. So when they put people together coughing on each other, or, you know, sneezing on each other, breathing on each other, sometimes in the past, you know, prior to ethics committees we have these days that would ban this kind of stuff, they used to take blood samples from people and inject it into other people to see if you could transmit disease. That didn't work. I mean, even so-called sexually transmitted diseases, they used to do experiments in the middle of last century. Unbelievably, they couldn't transmit them in natural settings. So they always resorted to these unnatural things, like occasionally injecting things directly into animals' brains, or doing things like attacking the skin with sandpaper first and then claiming that the person, quote, caught the virus after that because the skin was damaged. All of this kind of nonsense. And this is, you know, this goes way wider than COVID. This is everything. Influenza, measles, chickenpox, HIV, you know, doesn't exist. All of this stuff is complete nonsense. And we know who benefits from it. The public don't. The model is purely there to sustain the pharmaceutical industry and all of its biotech allies, as well as the political class, as well as the globalists who need the population under control, as well as the people pushing for the biosecurity surveillance state. Yes. You know, they're claiming that it's the world's got so dangerous that infections are going to just jump out of the jungle at any time. And, you know, you would have seen stuff like Disease X, where they start announcing pandemics before they're even supposed to arrive. So, yeah. Just, and guys, you know, I think, Calvin, I first talked to you, it might have been 2021, early 2021. And, you know, by then I couldn't believe that the pandemic, in quotes, was still on, because by June 2020, we thought this is so fraudulent. The Cochrane Collaboration, they published a analysis of all of the clinical research into, quote, COVID-19, and said that there are no specific symptoms or signs, i.e., they were just repackaging previous conditions like colds and flus and pneumonias. And we'd confirmed that already by going back to the four pivotal studies that came out of Wuhan, claiming that there was a new disease. No, just pneumonia. Same as, you know, all of those people in China that get sick because of poor air quality, malnutrition, general, you know, crowding and bad conditions over there. There was no new illness. And, you know, clearly the stuff where people were dropping in streets, etc., never happened anywhere else. Absolutely bogus. It was just one lie after another, which is why in countries like New Zealand, we had 24/7 propaganda on the radio from the government in the mainstream media.
Yeah, the one thing, and you're right, when we talked way back then, I was not buying into the whole narrative that the government was spinning. Hence, that's why we created Counter Spin, to take their spin, counter it, and put it back onto them. Every alternative that they offered people gave a reinforcement of the virus anyway, whether it was it a Wuhan leak, or was it this, or was it that, or did some chimpanzee, you know, a Costa watermelon type thing. Everything sustained this virus theory, which I've never bought into. Even the whole Wuhan lab one, we were offered a lot of money previously if we talked on the Wuhan thing, because it wasn't popular at the time with the media, because they were sticking with the main one. But we just knew in our gut that it was wrong, so we refused. Hence, that's why we're broke. But we can't, like you, we can't sell out our integrity just because someone waves a dollar. That leads to damnation of us all. And that's why we're voices like yours coming out and speaking so strongly to expose the truth and taking the hits. I mean, even within your own profession, these people, you know, look at you sideways. They're puff and probably don't even invite you to dinner. You know what I mean? Because they think you're crazy. But yet you bring the facts and evidence. And have they even bothered to read this stuff? It was interesting, you talked about the medical community, pharmaceutical companies, basically sustaining themselves on creating this fear-mongering so they can get more research grants, as long as they continue with the narrative. Anyone who bumps it doesn't. Of course, they get defunded. Intelligence communities are exactly the same thing. They create bogeymen. They create false flags, blow stuff up. So they say, look, everyone's out to kill you. You've got to pay us more. Give us total control and we will keep you safe. Just like the medical professional. Trust us. Let us jab you with everyone and sundry and you'll be safe. This whole thing stinks to high heaven, and the criminals are always escaping the noose. We do not understand this. It was something we've been talking about, you know, throughout the day.
Well, maybe Mark could tell the audience about what happened to his wife, Sam, because she's been through the ringer, hasn't she?
Yeah, definitely. And first of all, in March 2020, when, you know, Sam had just started her YouTube channel, and then she started getting flooded with questions about COVID-19. And, you know, quickly by the start of 2020, we'd realized there was something fraudulent going on. And we quickly got involved in this research. And at that stage, I was in the background because Sam was trying to run her channel and thought it would be a general health channel. But it quickly became this COVID-19 and PCR and virology channel with just the audience questions coming in. And when we knew we were onto something, because for a while there, Sam was getting 5,000 subscribers a day joining the channel, and it just went absolutely bananas. And we thought, this is great. We can just tell the world what's going on here, that it's a fraud. But then we noticed that if we said anything about there not being a virus, we'd suddenly get suppressed, and not just overtly, but absolute shadow banned. Like, you couldn't even find the videos unless you specifically typed in the URLs. So that was our first warning. We noticed that you might get a strike for talking about the PCR or vaccines, etc. But if you get into no virus, then you get instant shadow banning. And once your audience gets to a certain size, pretty much everything gets banned. So we were banned quickly off Facebook and some of the major platforms. With the YouTube channel, Sam learnt to kind of, produce material where it was obvious, well, semi-obvious, she was saying there was no virus without actually sometimes saying those words overtly, so it wouldn't trigger the censorship algorithms. So we thought by mid-2020, Sam thought, well, this is great. Lots of people coming on board, thousands of people a day are joining the channel. And hopefully by Christmas, we can shut down the whole fraud because we're just going to tell everyone now about the fact that there is no SARS-CoV-2. PCR's not detecting a virus. It's a fraudulent test. And that it's a complete case pandemic and there's nothing going on. But then by September, that's when the first kind of speed bumps we hit, and the Medical Council of New Zealand told her to that they had problems with her videos. And we thought, oh, this is interesting because it's not the practice of medicine. You know, none of her patients ever complained. She's not had one complaint ever. And we thought, well, what's this all about? You know, they don't have the right to come and tell you what you can say in your private time and your private research. But they seem to think they did. Around the same time, you know, we can't believe this now, but Sam was a mainstream TV presenter doing a part-time job there. And the main TVNZ, their lawyer, gets in touch with Sam and says, you have to take down these videos, you know. You can't say about that there's going to be a problem, you know, because Sam was talking about that they're going to introduce a vaccine, basically, and you shouldn't take it. That it's fraudulent. But of course, the TVNZ are like, no way can you say that, and told her to take the video down. And so Sam and I had about a 30-second discussion about what to do, and we just said, we're not listening to any of these people because clearly they are obstructing the truth from getting out to the public. And we continued to produce videos and write articles. And interestingly, the Medical Council they offered Sam a gag order. They said, sign this. And it was basically that she could never talk about COVID-19 ever again. And we were like, wow, what a joke. We had 30 seconds to consider that one before it went straight into the bin. And, that hasn't worked out for them too well because Sam's probably released a couple of hundred videos since that time. We've published a couple of books, I've published huge articles, etc. So they briefly tried to go after me, and which was interesting because I hadn't practiced since 2016 and I had nothing to do with the medical system. And curiously, in 2021, 2022, the Medical Council decided that they want to investigate me, but I just issued them with the notice and said, you know, that they were trying to create a constructive trust with me and that I'd turn the tables on them if they tried to push it any further. And so within about 24 hours, they disappeared me from the medical register, which suited me. I didn't need to be on it. So that was kind of what happened. But, you know, since that time, it's been fantastic in terms of we've been able to keep expanding that audience base, get out a lot of publications, and we just get new people coming on board all the time, and people that you wouldn't expect, retired doctors, former, you know, scientists that used to work in some of these labs where they thought they were working with viruses. We get people who were part of committees and organizations which really had to buy into the whole virus model and vaccine model, etc. So yeah, it's really exciting that the word is getting out there, and I think with the truth, that's always the way. They can only, you know, hold it back for so long.
Yeah, so maybe you could elaborate a little bit on, because people will say, well, you know, I get a cold or I get the flu, and then, you know, my,
therefore I've got COVID.
I'm around other people and then I've given it to them, and, you know, so there's this whole thing that we think that we're passing stuff on. So could you just explain what is the mechanism that is actually operating at that point?
Good question.
So here we should be clear. When, now once upon a time, contagion just meant coming into contact with a corrupting influence. Okay, so if we go back to about 1600s, so that could even mean that you come into contact with someone who gives you a headache, you know, or makes you feel sick. And that's been known for a very long time. That's nothing new, that kind of thing. The problem was, particularly by the late 1800s or mid to late 1800s, everything started changing. The whole germ theory started developing. There was a whole lot of fraudulent publications that went on. Powerful people started backing this stuff and saying that this is the real science, etc. So at that point, they became so focused that, you know, germ theory was real, that microbes, you know, being bacteria, fungus, etc., were causing diseases, that everything went down that road. So the previous definition of contagion got changed, and then they invented, you know, what people know as germs now, and said, oh, that's why you get sick in groups, or, you know, that's how people pass things on, it's via these germs. Now, unfortunately, that was never ever backed up by scientific publications. And as I alluded to earlier, this has never worked out for them. So every time they have tried to use bacteria or fungal cells to cause disease in healthy people, it doesn't work. Nothing happens. The person has to be compromised first, and then the microbes will proliferate. So they can be associated with it, but they're not the cause. But the problem was that this whole thing ran away with itself. And they said that, no, one person has the germs, then they come into contact with someone else, and then they pass the germs on to them. The whole thing, like, I mean, we've done very detailed analysis on this, and people should go to the website, drsambailey.com, where we've got papers and videos, etc., where we discuss this at length. But the mistake that they've made is that the germs, in quotes, are on us at all times. There's actually, if you take a human body, there are more cells that they call microbes than there are cells that they call humans. Now, people have to take a while for that to sink in. You can't survive without these, you know, kilograms of microbes basically in your gut and on your skin, everywhere, etc. I mean, they've tried experiments with that before with young animals, where they kept them in sterile conditions in the first few weeks of their life, and they die quickly. They get very sick and die because they don't have microbes to keep them alive. So yeah, it's this whole backwards thinking. So, but coming back
to, so this is what you guys refer to as like terrain theory. Like, if you look after your healthy microbiome and those microbes, that you will actually have a strong body that can fight any bacterial infection or anything that comes into the system.
Completely. Yeah, that's exactly what happens. Like, bacteria and fungi, etc., they can't attack healthy tissue. They just don't. There's no experiment in history that shows that. If you have devitalized tissue, so if you've got a cow and you kill it and you cut off a piece of its rump and then put that steak out in the sun, it will rot and it will break down. But you don't call that an infection, you know. You just say that's devitalized tissue, and now the bugs, the germs start breaking it down. Same in the human body. People get so sick that the tissue gets devitalized. It doesn't matter if it's still attached to their body. It's not germs attacking. It's tissue breaking down and then germs proliferating to clean up the mess, like the cleanup crew. But coming back to your question about transmission, yeah, there's many ways that people can influence each other. And if we look back to the influenza and common cold studies, they did a lot of them last century. Most of the stuff they don't want you to know about because of how embarrassing it was. They couldn't transmit these things. But they showed that sometimes you could just put a bit of water and salt up someone's nose and tell them that there was viruses in there, and they'd get sick. And then you could say to them, oh, actually, sorry, made a mistake. That was just water. And then their symptoms disappear. So you can see just this expectation of what will happen is important as well. And that's really important for what just happened during the COVID era, because they panic people. And then whenever anyone got a sniffle or felt a bit unwell, they panicked, they thought they had, quote, COVID. They went and got a test and thought, oh my goodness, this confirms it, that it was just confirmational bias and expectation. So, but the big thing with these contagion studies is that they don't work. So, you know, if you take something like the measles, they'll tell you that's highly contagious. Well, there's no study that shows being in the same room with a case of what they call measles will cause anyone else to get measles. All of the original quote transmission studies involve taking samples from a human or a chimpanzee model and then injecting it into other chimps or other humans and causing skin reactions and then saying, look at that, we just transmitted it. So all of this nonsense about chickenpox being transmitted via the air, etc., not one study can show that at all. So, and I'm not saying that people don't get sick in clusters, we know that they do, but there's often common environmental conditions. So put it this way, if you guys in your household are both sick and you go, oh yeah, we've got terrible cold or flu or something, and I come and visit you for 30 minutes, there's no way I'll get sick because I'm not under the same conditions, etc., and vice versa. So this is all the stuff that they don't want people to know about. And there's actually a new book out by an Australian, Daniel Reuters, called Can You Catch a Cold? He's documented over 100 years of all of the failed experiments with colds and flus. And it's an amazing book because it's irrefutable. It really is a problem for the people that are pushing this, you know, model of contagion. And it's really important because when you say that things are being transmitted by microbes, the whole industry then forms around that, because that's where you get your antiseptics, you know, whether it's a hand wash or something. That's where you get your, quote, antiviral, which are some of the most dangerous drugs around. They're actually anti-metabolites. They work against the very cells in your body because viruses don't exist. You get the vaccine industry, obviously, and all of the stuff. And people think, but how could they do all of this? And it's based on a very simple fraud. It's based on just saying that germs are pathogenic. It's based on saying that viruses exist when they've never been shown to exist. That's the starting point. Once they have that, it's a piece of cake. It all runs away from there.
Wow.
Yeah, and it would seem that, you know, I feel like I will get what we call a cold or a flu or something like that when I haven't been getting enough sleep, I'm not, you know, eating properly, I'm not looking after my body, and it's a way of the system kind of telling you, you know, you need to actually look after yourself, do those things that you know keep your body vital, but, you know, mainstream will tell you take these, you know, flu pills to keep you going, override your own system. Maybe you've had a bit of poison, whatever that is, bad food or something in the air or, you know, something in your environment into the system, and it's just your body's way of trying to clear out whatever it is that shouldn't be in there.
It's detoxifying itself.
Yeah, it's detoxing.
And nature does it all the time, doesn't it? Nature actually shows us consistently that there's always a regeneration taking place. Like I read some of Cowan's work where he's talking about trees that shed leaves and then regrow again because they act like filters. And once the filters are clogged, it sheds them, creates new ones, so it can continue the health and lifespan of the tree. Same with women, you know, it's not, periods aren't contagious, but when they're all in together, they seem to synchronize their menstrual cycles. Now, that's not a contagion. But it's the environment, like you say, that it's in. I've never bought into that at all. I personally don't get sick, so I wouldn't know what these mere mortals actually experience myself. And yet I'm probably the one. I don't eat the birdseed stuff because sometimes I get at cafes. I don't go for that birdseed, you know, pumpkin seeds and crap that these people eat, or the rabbit food. You know, coffee, bottles of V and all that, and I'm still going strong.
Yeah, but
it's the mindset, I think. Do you believe in a large part, and I think you alluded to it before, it's your mindset, and that's why they spend so much dollars on advertising to mess with your mind, because if they can break up here, they will break your body.
Yeah, well, Calvin, you're a bit like me, because I know how busy you are. I'm the same. I have no time to get sick, and that's the attitude I have, because you know, I've got all this, the work I do on, you know, the salmon I do online, etc., and writing books, but also looking after a young family and running a small farm, etc. And it was like when, during this fake COVID pandemic, and people said, oh, did you guys get it? And first of all, we told them there is no it. And then we said, well, if you don't believe in it, it doesn't actually happen to you, you know, because, yeah, a lot of it is, you know, there are definite reasons why people get sick. And what Hannah was saying there is completely right. It's been a backwards way of looking at things, because if you think of the whole basis, and the system I was trained in is known as allopathy, you know, allopathic medicine, which means that it's against the symptoms. So we were taught how to prescribe powerful medications and do surgery, et cetera, radiation therapy, because we would treat the symptoms as though they were the disease, instead of saying the body's trying to find a way out of this and the symptoms are the manifestation. So that's what you need to encourage. You need to get through those symptoms and allow them to be uninhibited. So for instance, if someone presents with something like asthma, or eczema, say, common here in New Zealand, the doctor might say, well, we can give you steroids, which are anti-inflammatories, and yeah, you'll stop the symptoms, but then you'll cause a much worse problem in the long run with these steroids in your system, because now the body was trying to find a way to get out, you know, to heal itself, and there was an inflammatory response. But if you don't allow that response to finish, you just cause further problems down the line. And that can be anything from, you know, minor stuff through to cancer. So it's really serious stuff, and the people often don't realize that the system they're going into is actually causing a lot of the problems, because they're never quite getting back to balance once again. But and again, it comes back to this different way of looking at how the body works, and it's not some sort of car that you replace, you know, bits if you need to, et cetera. You have to allow the body to do its natural thing. And
I've got an interesting question for you, Mark, because students of medicine, they invest so much money into their education and so much time. And it's such a, you know, in mainstream society, it's such prestigious industry or, you know, career path.
Get laid a lot.
And we love, we all respect doctors, and we're taught to really revere them, and they're experts. We're always taught to hand over the healthcare. But how is it that someone in your position actually can, you know, way back in 2016, think, actually, this isn't sitting right with me? Because you've invested so much into it. That it must, well, I don't know, what was it like for you to actually
break free?
Say, yeah, actually, have I been conned here, or have I actually been looking in from a wrong perspective? How did that happen?
Well, for me, and I've talked to a lot of doctors who got out of the system early, like I was 40 when I left the system, which is obviously very early. Most doctors aren't going to quit at that point. It was like a black cloud lifted. Because for so long, I felt like something was wrong with what we were doing. And also the fact, you know, I had a background as a professional athlete, and there was no way that the stuff we were doing in the hospital I'd have done on me. I wouldn't take those drugs or allow those procedures to be done on my body or any of my family, that's for sure. So, yeah, for me, it was just increasingly that discomfort of going, I can't be part of this. But you know what? It was actually really liberating getting out of it, because it was then you could just speak honestly. And when I was in the system, and you guys know this, the licensing system is so bad that they make you're really confined in what you can say to patients. Like certain things you're not allowed to say because they'll just strike you off, basically. And most of what you're not allowed to say is the truth. Like, for instance, a doctor can't say to people vaccines are a scam. They'll get struck off. But they're one of the biggest scams in history. There is irrefutable. There's no evidence that vaccines work, and they can't possibly work for a number of reasons. Like, one is that viruses have never been shown to exist. So forget about every single vaccine that's based on, you know, these imaginary viruses. But the fact is germ theory is not valid either. So there's no way that these things can offer people any protection. And so I think it's seeing the fraud and how big it is, and to me it was a no-brainer to leave in 2016. I actually in 2016 I wanted Sam to leave as well, but she's a bit younger and she actually had some jobs, a research job that she really loved and stuff. And so I said, I've got such a bad feeling about this whole thing. And, you know, sure enough, 4 years later, we get the COVID era and complete madness. So, no, and I think, guys, it is one of those things where most doctors, you know, in the new book, we've got a subchapter called Stuffing Their Mouths with Gold. And, you know, it's a famous quote from Aneurin Bevan when he established the NHS in the UK. And it's honestly how it works. It's like in so many industries. If people are getting paid six figures, seven figures, they get addicted to it and they'll go along with it. And I think, you know, we saw that in the COVID-19 era. They 99% of doctors plus didn't do a thing. They just let all these awful things happen to patients and the population to maintain their salaries, because the small number of doctors that did speak out lost their jobs basically almost instantly for some of them, you know, or within weeks. And that continues to happen through to this day. Or, you know, even doctors that try and publish material that goes against the narrative, like say they publish something that goes against the vaccine narrative, they could be struck off as well straight away. It's like, so, you know, you've got other doctors and they look at it and they're terrified. They just go, it's not worth it. I may as well just be quiet. And, you know, doctors in the system that I've tried to talk to, they will not talk about it. They just instantly say, I'm not talking, I don't want to talk about it. And whether it's COVID or vaccines, etc., they just have this complete block where I think it's, you know, it's a case of Russell conjugation, which means they think about what it would mean to go down this road, losing job, you know, losing prestige, losing various things, and they think it's not worth it. I'd rather just go along with it. And also the propaganda for medical students and doctors in the system is huge. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you guys. I was tricked by this whole germ theory virus model thing. Like when I was in the system, I had all these big textbooks that told me, you know, it was real. Here's the electron micrographs. Here's the antibody studies. Here's the PCR and genomics elements. And I thought, wow, great evidence. These days I look at it and can see straight through it. And, you know, that's why, in addition to the more lighthearted, easier stuff to understand that Sam produces most weeks for the public, we also write extensive technical papers, you know, like I wrote A Farewell to Virology. It's 29,000 words. It's never, no one's ever attempted to refute it, as far as I know, because it just...
I was going to bring that up. Yeah. I was going to bring that up. That's actually very good. I was leading to that. That was going to be next. I was going to say, has anyone ever challenged your work there? But it's good you brought that up. So anyone in the world who wants to make an attempt, do so and let us know how it works out for you. We've got little Storm, like you've got young kids as well. We've got Storm. He's one on April 3rd. Now, most parents, when they're, because we love our kids, well, any normal sane parent would anyway. And if they get sick, you sort of freak out and you think, oh no, what's going to happen? The first instance is always there for people, rush to the doctor. He has a sneeze, rush to the doctor. And then they just give him all sorts of crap, like Pamol and all that sort of stuff to take temperature down and everything. We've done nothing. He's been sick twice only for a very short time. We let his temperature go up. We just kept an eye on it, make sure it didn't get too hot. And and he was always happy. Within a couple of days, nothing. He's never been jabbed. He never will be jabbed. And he's completely strong, healthy. We let him crawl around in the mud and everything like that. He's a ball. And he's healthy and he's aware. I don't understand why more parents don't start doing that. I think, like you said, this is actually a case.
I'll tell you why, Calvin, because I want to share this. We haven't actually talked about what happened after he was born. Obviously, he was offered vitamin K, and Calvin was really great, and there was one really bolshy nurse, and Calvin told her in no uncertain terms what she could do.
You know how I speak, Mark.
But what was even more concerning is that we were staying with some friends out in the middle of nowhere, you know, and unannounced, the gates were shut to the property, and we all of a sudden just heard this horn beeping. And we weren't expecting anybody, so we didn't really think it was for us. And then it just wouldn't stop, like 5 or 10 minutes of this horn beeping. So we went out, and it was, can you believe it, the Ministry of Health, 3 people in a car, have driven, like, you know, a good 45 minutes from one of the big hospitals, to come out to try to convince me that I needed to jab my newborn baby with all these toxins. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, you haven't emailed me. You haven't even called me. Like, apparently I'd missed a phone call from them, but they had had no confirmation from me to come. They weren't invited. And they actually thought that it was okay to do that. And now I made it very clear that I had done my research and that this was not going to be happening. But I just asked them, is this standard practice? They said, yes, it is. And I just thought of all those young mums, the new mums that maybe hadn't done all their research, and
how fast they would be tricked.
Yeah, and how they would just get pressured, and they would think that because the government agents are coming and they know best, that they would hand over their precious children to get vaccinated. So, I mean, I was just blown away. I mean, I'd heard about this happening, but I didn't think they'd come all that way. And, yeah, I was just quite blown away.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those things where in most Western countries, well, probably most countries in the world, as soon as you bring a child into the world, they're trying to register them on vaccine, you know, databases, and they're trying to jab them with all sorts of things from day one. And yeah, it's so disturbing that the people involved in this, the midwives, the doctors and the nurses, they probably don't even know the harms that they're doing. They're just being told that this is the best thing to do. So, you know, and people out there can challenge them, these people who are administering these, whether it's vitamin K or vaccines, and just say, well, where's the evidence, please? Can you point me to the studies? Because they don't have them. They don't, you know, if you ask them for, where's a study showing that giving a child the childhood vaccination schedule would lead to a better outcome? You know, because those studies don't exist. I mean, Sam and her Virus Mania co-authors have spent years trying to get this information out of the various health institutions, whether it's the CDC or the RKI in Germany, etc., who all claim that, you know, that kids do better with vaccines. They have no evidence, and we know the whole basis to it, you know, pseudoscience, so it can't possibly be true. But yeah, absolutely. And it's this, what we try and help them with, people, the public with, is to see that you do not need this cradle to grave medical system that's based in allopathy. You simply don't. I mean, they have a couple of good things, you know, whether it's trauma, etc., or broken bones. There are some life-saving stuff. I'm not denying that whatsoever. But around 90% of it you can reject. We certainly have, as trained doctors, and we have nothing to do with pharmaceuticals. We have nothing to do with vaccines. We have nothing to do with screening programs, nothing to do with most tests that they perform. You don't need any of the stuff. And, you know, if people are unsure about it, just as I say, you can come to our website or the websites of other people who have done independent research, and you can find out that you can live in a much better paradigm where, A, it's not costing you money, B, you're not scared all the time that something's going to go wrong, and see, you actually just learn how to look after yourself, and you know, and benefit not only yourself but your family and community.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Well, I think that's a great place to end it, Mark. Maybe if you just say where people can purchase your book, give the website again, and where people can follow you and Sam.
Yeah, definitely. So everything is based at drsambailey.com. So drsambailey.com. So people can order our books there. They can see the hundreds of videos and articles that we've written. If people are there thinking that we've, you know, not done deep research, they can read my technical papers on virology, etc. So, yeah, and there's books like Sam's co-authored, like Virus Mania, which have 1,400 references, etc. So it's all well documented, and yeah, that's what they can do.
That's awesome, and that is a brilliant book.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your evening.
Say hello to Sam.
Yeah, congratulations on the day as well. I think you're past the halfway point, so you're going great.
Yeah, we're on the home stretch now.
A few more bottles of V and I'll be sweet.
Not too many.
All right. Okay.
You're watching Counterspin, New Zealand's media revolution. The platform where truth lives and the government and bought and paid for media lies come to die. Find us at counterspinmedia.com.
Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities.
The El Paso, Las Cruces communities.
Eastern Iowa communities.
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But
we are concerned about troubling, trying to be responsible, one-sided news stories plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false
news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media outlets publish these fake stories without checking facts first.
Unfortunately, some members of the media use their platforms to push their own personal bias and agenda to control exactly what people think, and this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
But don't worry, because now we have Counterspin Media, who is clearly an extreme danger to this democracy, destroying Mockingbird Media Complex. Counterspin untangles these scripted narratives of lies and deceit. So to find out how to unspin these media lies, visit CounterspinMedia.com, where lies come to die.
Are you enjoying this 12-hour Truthathon presentation? Do you believe in the importance of Counterspin Media's mission to expose falsehoods and deliver evidence-based factual content? You see, never before in history has it been so important to support a media organisation that is fighting for your freedoms, fighting for your freedom of speech, but also who refuses to be influenced by false narratives. Your donation will help keep them independent, and it's very costly to make such quality content. Please look at their website. There's a number of ways that you can donate, and together we can combat false information. Because you see, at Counterspin is where lies die, but truth prevails.
Keep checking back on counterspinmedia.com and look under the videos tab for more videos from the Conquering Darkness Truthathon.
Counterspinmedia.com, where lies come to die.